Extend Christian greetings to each one gathered here this morning. I've been encouraged and blessed to be here and be part of the service thus far, and trust that we will listen to what the Lord has for us this morning as we go through this message and ponder our own lives and how we can be better servants for Him. To let the church grow. And if we think about that Sunday school lesson, you know, it starts with each and every one of us being a strong link in the church. And may we be that. For a message this morning, you can turn to Philippians chapter 3. I'd like to use a few verses here for a springboard. We're not going to stay here for the message, but it's a message that has come to me. I've been pondering this last number of months as I evaluated my own life. And I want you to take an evaluation of your own life this morning and ponder this. And the title of the message is, What Are Your Goals? What are your goals? I don't know what your goals are. I don't know what you're focused on. But you do. Or if you don't know, you better take a look at it. Paul writing to the Philippians here, chapter 3, verse 13. Look at his goal. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of a high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded. If anything ye be otherwise minded, God shall reveal even this unto you. You see his goal? He is not where he'd like to be, but he's working towards that, and he's not quite there. He's not quite apprehended to it, but he has a focus. He has a goal that he's pressing towards, and he's going to do all in his power to reach that goal. And so for us today, he calls us on to let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded. Let's focus on our goals this morning. This message this morning was there was a strike up there in the correctional facilities, and there was a lot of people that were not working, and they were protesting, holding up signs there. And I drove past the Five Points Correctional Facility there the one day, and as the people were standing out there, there was a sign that one fellow was holding up that I had to go on Google to find out what the sign meant, because I didn't know what else it meant. And the sign that he was holding up was something like this. 70% equals 100%, but then he has a slash through the equals. And I pondered that. I'm like, as I was driving, I'm like, what is he meaning by that? Like, and so as I pondered that part of this message came about through that, but I thought about in our Christian life. In fact, maybe I should go back to that sign. As I went to print a sign to hold up here to show you what I was looking at that day, there is no emblem that way. You can't find it on a computer. And so you had to make do with it. But as I pondered that sign that day driving, 70% is not 100%. In other words, they were saying they weren't going to be satisfied with a 70% agreement to come to. It's going to be 100% for them. That's what they were saying in that strike that was going on there. And I pondered that in my Christian life, and my challenge is for you in your Christian life to ponder. Are you giving 100% or are you giving 70% and you're satisfied with it? That's a concerning part. Because if I'm only given 70%, we start into that lukewarm that he talks about in Revelation. And we start entering into a shaky ground. So I want you today to look at your own life. How am I, what is my goal of serving Paul is committed in Philippians chapter 3. He's committed to serve Christ with everything, and you read about his life, and he was committed with everything. And I want you and I to ponder this morning, what is my commitment to God? What is my goal in serving God? What am I focused on in serving God? Is it self or is it God? And you need to rate that in your life. I call you to rate that this morning. Because, well, you go to a hospital and they ask you, what's your pain level on zero level scale, 1 to 10? Zero being no pain and 10, you can hardly stand it. And so I want you to rate yourself this morning and your goal of serving Christ. Where is it at? A quote that we've heard before, I'm sure. But if you've aimed at nothing, you're sure to hit it. Deer hunters know what that's like, right? If you're not worried about hitting a deer, that's no problem to go out there and shoot a gun if you aren't aiming at anything. Well, in life, it's the same way. In your spiritual life, it's the same way. If you aren't aiming at something, you're sure to hit it, and it's going to be in a disaster. If you don't put energy and effort into your goals, you won't achieve them. Now, you think about some goals that's in the world about us today, and there is so many of them, and find my right paper I'm looking for here. I had a devotional book I was going through, and here's what is said in there. A goal has a definite plan of action to reach it, and you're supposed to ask me to follow these goal setting steps. Decide on your goal, write down your goal, make plans of how to reach your goal. Set dates to complete your plan and a goal, and find a friend to check on your progress. And I pondered those through the days following that. You know, maybe it was also in the spiritual life and in family life. But in a day-to-day basis, those of you that have businesses realize that you need to have a goal of what you're going to do that day. There's something you focus on in that day to get there, and you focus and you work towards that. We don't always reach them. But we need to make a definite plan of action. I've been one of those that's been known to not always make a plan, and I find out those days that I don't really make a plan, probably nothing gets done. I work on this a little bit, and I work on that a little bit, and get done at the end of the day, and what did you finish and accomplish? And so, yeah, we need, in a natural sense, in our day-to-day work, we need goals. In our spiritual life, you need to have a goal. You do. Having goals is very important in life. Remember when I was a young person in school? I remember sometimes they would hand out a school paper, and they'd ask us as school children to answer some questions that they could put in that paper. And one of those questions is, what do you want to be when you grow up? I didn't like that question so good when I was in first, second grade. Especially not when I go back and read any of those answers, because I didn't reach my goals of what I had back then. But that's life too. But we need today to make goals for the future. And so, children, your goal needs to be to listen, obey your parents, learn wisdom to take you through life, that when you come to the age of your parents, you know how to face life, how to do life. You start out with a relationship with Jesus Christ. You need that in your life. You need to give your heart to Jesus. To go through life and not have that as one of your goals to serve Christ is a weak, weak life. If you put self there and your goal is to please self and to serve self, you have a hard life that you're going to be living. Because life about our own personal life is that I just want more. I want more. And you'll never reach that goal. So my question to us this morning is, what do you want out of life? What are you trying to get out of life? What's driving you in life? What motivates your daily actions? Is there something in your daily actions that is part of your goal of serving Christ and you take time for personal Bible reading? That's where I believe it can hit home for us. What is my focus? What is my goal? Are we doing all in our power to reach our goals of serving Christ? Now for the message, I'm going to go to a Old Testament account and ponder some things. I like to kind of sometimes do this and look at people's life. And this nears kind of a negative outcome. And I kind of apologize for it, but I believe there's positive we can learn from it. You can turn to 1 Kings chapter 3. First Kings chapter 3. Let's get a little glimpse of who Solomon was. Solomon was the son of David, which if you Bible readers know, David was that king that every other king was weighed beside, was looked beside. He followed after God, either they followed after God as David his father did, or he walked away. And you can read it as you go read in the Old Testament account of the kings. David was that plumb line that everyone was measured by in kingdom, or in the king, being a king there in Israel. But here's his son Solomon that is coming to the throne, and David is passing off the scenes, and here's Solomon stepping up and trying to fill that role of the task of leading the children of Israel. And let's read 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 5. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night and said, and the God said, ask what I shall give thee. And Solomon said, thou hast showed unto thy servant David my father great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth, and in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out and come in. And thy servant it is in the midst of thy people which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore to thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people? What a speech. What a man that looked at himself and his responsibility of leading these people, and he's realizing that there's something that's going to have to happen that is not all about Solomon. In verse 10, let's keep reading there. In the speech, please the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto them, because thou hast asked this thing, hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the fame, life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And if thou wilt walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem and stood before the ark of the covenant of the Lord and offered up burnt offerings and offered peace offerings and made a feast to all his servants. We see this dream that Solomon had. He was faced with leading these people. And he realized that there needs to be a goal. And what was his goal? In verse 9, we find one. An understanding heart to judge thy people. Judge between the good and the bad. He needs to judge his people and lead this people, and he needs wisdom to decide what is good and what is bad. One of his Solomon, as I read these verses, Solomon's goal was to do the best he could. To do the best he could in leading God's people, but not of man's help, but God's help. He's not asking for his wisdom for himself, really. He just wants God's help in leading these people. And his goal in his life was to serve God with his whole heart and give the best as he was faced with the responsibility of leading these people. He was going to give his best to the work which he was called to do. What a goal. What a focus. If Solomon could have maintained that focus the whole way through his life, as David his father did. Did David ever have failures? He sure did. But David came back and he realigned his life with serving God again. And that's where Solomon falls away from it. And so the story from such a noble, lofty goal in Solomon's life of leading this people right starts to falter from here on out. I believe as we read his dream, his statement to the Lord, it was not about self, but it was about God. Now I'd like to just go on in the story here to the next one that we see of Solomon. Chapter 4, 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. Solomon had asked for wisdom and God gave it to him, is what it says here. And God, verse 29, and God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan, the Ezrahite, and Heman, the Kohath, and Dada, the son of Mahol. I'm sorry, I'm not good at reading names, but those are the names there. And his fame was in all nations round about. And he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. And he spake of trees, from the cedar tree that is in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of beasts and of fowl and of creeping things and of fishes. Last verse, sir. And there came all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all kings of the earth which had heard of his wisdom. There was nothing you could ask Solomon that he didn't know about. I put that in there. It doesn't say that. But he was such a wise man. Look at the list of things. You start talking about it, you might as well not argue with Solomon because he knew it. Because he had the wisdom. He retained it. He gathered it and the Lord was giving it to him. But verse 34, I see a glimpse into his life. You see, he was focused on wisdom to lead God's people right, and that was his goal and focus. But in verse 34, all people came to hear the wisdom of Solomon. No longer is the wisdom just for leading God's people, but all of a sudden the focus is starting to shift. The goal is starting to be that people are listening for the wisdom I have. I believe he is starting to turn the wisdom of leading God's people into his own benefit. And his goal seems to be starting to shift. And let's go on to chapter 7. Let's look at Solomon's life again. I believe there's some more that we have from Solomon's life. As you see his goal starting to weaken and shake a little bit. He's starting to build a house here. In 1 Kings chapter 7, but Solomon was building his own house 13 years. And he finished all his house, and he built also the house of the forest of Lebanon, and the length thereof was 100 cubits, and the breadth thereof 50 cubits, and the height thereof 30 cubits, among four rows of cedar pillars, with cedar beams upon the pillars. And it was covered with cedar above upon the beams that lay on 45 pillars, 15 in a row. And there were windows in three rows, and light was against light in three ranks, and all the doors and posts were square, with the windows And light was against light in three ranks, and he made a porch of pillars, and the length thereof was 50 cubits, and the breadth thereof 30 cubits. And the porch was before them, and the other pillars and the thick beams were upon them, and he made a porch of his throne, where he might judge, even the porch of judgment. It was covered with cedar from one side of the floor to the other. And his house where he dwelt had another court within the porch, which was like work, which was of the like work. Solomon made also an house for Pharaoh's daughter, whom he had taken to wife, like unto this porch. All these were of costly stones, according to the measure of hewed stones, sawed with saws, within and without, even from the foundation under the coping, and so on the outside toward the great court. And the foundation was of costly stones, even great stones, stones of 10 cubits and stones of 8 cubits. And above were costly stones at the measures of hewn stones and cedars. And the great court round about was of 3 rows of hewed stones, a row of cedar beams, both of the inner court of the house of the Lord and for the porch of the house. And King Solomon sent and fetched Hiram out of Tyre. And we're going to cease reading there. As we ponder this passage, I'm not a builder by any means. Some of these words, some of these pictures of what all this means, or what all the design and layout of this is, can sometimes go over my head what it is. But what I see in this is, as we ponder Solomon and his goal of leading the people, God had told him back there that he's going to get caught or have all these riches as well that comes with it, the wisdom. But Solomon started to use his wisdom, and his goal seems to have shifted to start to pad life for self. Seems to have shifted maybe to serving self and his own pleasures, his own desires, and not so much serving God and what God to further God and to lead God's people right. And so you ponder that, as I ponder my own life. And things that start to hinder my goals in life, my goal of serving Christ. One of those things is the snare of self. The snare that I start losing focus, and what happens is it starts to become about Ronald Smith anymore. And so, let's be careful for that goal of self. And let's make sure that we align our goal up, and not to please self, but our goal needs to be to serve Christ and to continue to serve God and His people. Now, let's go on to the next one, 1 Kings chapter 10. We get another glimpse in King Solomon's life. And I said this is kind of a negative look at it, but here's a man that had a lofty goal at the start, and it's starting to spiral downward. 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 14. We'll start reading there. Now the weight of gold that came to Solomon 1 year was 603 talents of gold. Can't wrap my mind around it. I didn't do the math on it, but you just figure that if you had gold, that much gold in a day, in today's world, what that would have meant. Besides that, he had a merchantman, and of the traffic of the spice merchants, and of all the kings of Arabia, and of the governors of the country. And the king Solomon made 200 targets of beaten gold. 600 shekels of gold went to one target. He made 300 shields of beaten gold. 3 pounds of gold went to one shield. And the king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and laid it with the best gold. The throne had 6 steps, and the top of the throne was round behind. And there were stays on either side of the place of the seat. And 2 lions stood beside the stays. And 12 lions stood there on one side and on the other. Upon the 6 steps there were not the like made in any kingdom. Let's keep reading. And all King Solomon's drinking vessels were of gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were of pure gold. None were of silver. It was nothing accounted of in the days of Solomon. And the king had at sea a navy of Tarshish with a navy of Haram. Once in 3 years came the navy of Tarshish, bringing gold and silver, ivory and apes and peacocks. So King Solomon exceeded all the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom. And all earth sought to Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. And they brought every man his present, vessels of silver and vessels of gold and garments and armor and spices, horses and mules, a rate year by year. And Solomon gathered together chariots and horsemen, and he had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen, whom he bestowed in the cities for chariots, and in the king at Jerusalem. And the king made silver to be in Jerusalem as stones, and cedars made he to be as the sycamore trees that are in the vale for abundance. And Solomon had horses brought out of Egypt, and linen yard, and king's merchants received the linen yard at a price. And a chariot came up and went out of Egypt for 600 shekels of silver, and a horseman for 150. And so for all the kings of the Hittites and for the kings of Syria did they bring them out by their means. It's a lot of reading, and you ponder that whole thing of why I would read that whole passage there. We know Solomon was wealthy. But his wealth is taking the place. His wealth is cutting in. We said it started serving self. And serving self brings with it the thought of serving. It all comes to me, the wealth and the materialism. It's all about me. And the self continues to build. And no longer is it about God that gives the wisdom. But it's about, what can I get? What can I get out of life? What can I glean? And he's using his wealth and his wisdom to gain himself more wealth and to bring more prosperity to himself. It's okay. It's right that we pay our bills. It's right that today we get money and make a living. But do you notice what starts happening? That this can become a goal of life. That all we are doing in life is our focus and our goal is to gain more wealth and to gain riches and to make a name for ourselves. It's part of King Solomon's downward spiral from that goal that he had, not lofty goal, of leading God's people right. It is spiraling downward and it's coming more and more into his own life and taking his spiritual life. Now we're going to go into chapter 11, 1 Kings chapter 11. And we start to notice what his goal is doing. We said his goal was to lead God's people right, to lead them into all truth. And here's what happened. In his downward spiral, but King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonites, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord had said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you. For surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. Do we need to read more? His goal of serving God and leading God's people right has now come to the place that what God has said that you as children of Israel were not to do, I'm the king. It doesn't matter. I can do it anyhow. I want it. I'm going to have it. That's what's happening here. It has led from him wanting to do right in the sight of God and wanting to lead his people right to doing evil in the sight of the Lord. Verse 6, and Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord and went not fully after the Lord as did David his father. You notice I said at the start of the message that kings were weighed and marked as to how they walked in line with David in his walk with the Lord. Well, here's his son Solomon. He has such a noble example of his dad. What happened?
He had such a good goal at the start. The road downward starts with small steps in the wrong direction.
And it led Solomon to that place of where he was did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he didn't care.
Verse 9, let's pick up reading there as we ponder on and into Solomon's life. And the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other gods, but he kept not that which the Lord had commanded. Wherefore the Lord said unto Solomon, Forasmuch as this is done of thee, and thou hast not kept my covenant and my statutes which I have commanded thee, I will surely rend thy kingdom from thee and will give it to thy servant. Notwithstanding, in thy days I will not do it for David thy father's sakes, but I will rend it out of the hand of thy son. Howbeit, I will not rend away all the kingdom, but will give one tribe to thy son for David my servant's sake, and for Jerusalem's sake, which I have chosen. I see here King Solomon's wrong goals. He lost that focus and he left sin come into his life, and not changing his goal again to serving Christ, it is still going downward. And now he don't even care whether it affects other people. There's idolatry, there's spiritual decline in Israel. And he and his people are turned away from God. Remember the saying, sin will take you farther than you want to go and keep you longer than you want to stay. God had spoke to King Solomon. Verse 9, it says, which had appeared to him twice. And Solomon wouldn't come back to his goal of serving God and leading Israel right. God wanted him back there, but he wouldn't do it. Where's the end of this? Where does this end up for Solomon? 1 Kings chapter 11, let's go on down this passage here. I'd like to start reading in verse 26, but it's a lot of reading. Let's read that. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 26, and Jeroboam the son of Nebat, an Ephrathite of Zerida, Solomon's servant, whose mother's name was Zerah, a woman, widow woman, even he lifted up his head against the king. And this was the cause that he lifted up his hand against the king. Solomon built Milo and repaired the breaches of the city of David his father. And the man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor. And Solomon, seeing the young man that he was industrious, he made him ruler over all the charge of the house of Joseph. And it came to pass at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him in the way, and he was clad himself with a new garment, and there were two alone in the field. And Ahijah caught the new raiment that was on him, and rent it in 12 pieces. He said to Jeroboam, take thee 10 pieces, for thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon, and will give ten tribes to thee. But he shall have one tribe for my servant David's sake, for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel. Because that they have forsaken me, and have worshipped Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Zidonites, Chemoth, the god of the Moabites, and Malcolm, the god of the children of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do that which is right in mine eyes, and to keep my statutes and my judgments as did David my father. Howbeit, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hands, but I will make him prince of all the days of his life for David my servant's sake, whom I chose, because he kept my commandments and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand and will give it to thee, even 10 tribes. And we're going to cease reading there
and you ponder that, what happened to this kingdom there, there is division, there's conflict that's happening, there is no peace there. Why? Why? Because he left his goal of serving Christ and he left wickedness come in. And did not come back to the goal of serving Christ and keeping that goal in focus. And that goal led to division and conflict in his kingdom. Satan likes to paint the picture. And I'm saying this in looking at my own life. When I was a young man, and I still see him trying to do it today, and that is that the world had looked so glamorous. There is so much fun out there. But I'm old enough to talk to enough other people that are out there, and they say, you have so much in a church. Why do you want what's out there? The world knows that out there there's division and conflict. They know that's what's the end of living in their world and the goals that they have. And so my call for us today is to ponder the end. It is very serious to us that we choose right goals of serving Christ. And we make him first and foremost in our lives. And serve him with our whole heart. Let's not let the decisions of what Solomon had happening in his life, the things that tripped him up in his goals, let's not let that happen in our lives. Now let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. It's a passage that we believe Solomon wrote. We're not going to read this whole passage, but we're going to read a little bit of it. Possibly Solomon wrote this. Bible scholars aren't sure of it, but as I ponder this passage and you ponder Solomon's life and where he was and his wisdom that he had, I believe Solomon wrote this. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 1. I said in mine heart, go to now, approve thee with mirth, with fun, pleasure seeking. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this is all vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself to wine. Yea, acquainted mine heart with wisdom, to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heavens all the days of their life. I made me great works, I builded me houses, I planted me vineyards, I made me gardens and orchards, I planted trees, and then of all kinds of fruits, I made me pools of water, to water wherewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle, above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and peculiar treasures of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men, as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great, and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatsoever mine eyes desired I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my proportion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do. And it was such a great thing. Is that what he says? No. And behold, this was all vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. It was just an empty life. Just an empty life. And we could keep reading. He has more that he adds there. But we're going to cease reading there. And just, if you have time, read the rest of Ecclesiastes chapter 2 sometime. And just ponder all the things that Solomon had. And he realized when he came to the end of his life,
there's nothing valuable. Solomon's wrong goals led him into a place of disillusionment and failure. He had all the wisdom, more than any other man. But when you read his life story, what did it do? He used that wisdom, and he used it, and he followed earthly pursuits. His goals changed from serving Christ to following self in the world, and his vanity and vexation of spirit. Ecclesiastes, I believe, is a book written by Solomon on the musings of his life. As he pondered life and where it had taken him, this is his conclusion. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. It sums up all of Solomon's writing in the book of Ecclesiastes. And as you think of all his goals he had in life, and he has this message for you and I today: to put our goals at the right place. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. What is your goal in life? Where should you be focused on? Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Because there's an end coming. Verse 14, for God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. And so there's an end coming. And Solomon, as he pondered his life, he calls you and I to this great and noble thing of serving God and keep your goals right. The sad part is, we don't have anywhere in Scripture where Scripture records if Solomon ever repented and changed his goal and his focus in life. He finishes Ecclesiastes with a call for you and I. But did he ever change his goals? We don't know. Read Hebrews chapter 11. The men of faith that were there, how did they get there? It's by their goals of serving Christ and walking close to him. Peter calls for some goals for us today. We're not going to take the time to read to these different passages, but in 1 Peter, he calls us to have goals of being holy. Holy living. You can find that in Hebrews or 1 Peter chapter 1. He calls us to the goal of loving one another. He calls us to the goal of being strangers and pilgrims in the world. In chapter 2. Chapter 3, Peter calls us to be of a meek and quiet spirit. What a goal that is for us today. He also in chapter 3 talks to husbands, to be a godly husband. What's your goal, fathers? Is it to be a godly husband? To lead your children in your home right? Love life. Another one in 1 Peter chapter 3, to love life. Life is a gift from God. Calls us to have a goal of testifying for Christ in chapter 3 as well. Chapter 4 in 1 Peter talks about to be used of God and to serve God. Goals that we can have. Calls leaders to feed the flock of God in chapter 5. Brethren, how are we doing? What is our goal in life? Are you reaching your goal? We know the ultimate goal is heaven. That's part of our desire is to reach heaven. And it affects our walk through this life. Are we faithful in following? Solomon didn't change his goal. His goal at the start, he walked away from it. And he didn't come back and realize that I need to go back to Christ. He makes this statement in chapter 12, verse 13, for us today, but it doesn't say that he came back and recognized it himself. Today, we live in a day of opportunity. Brothers and sisters, if we find in our own lives, as we look at our goals in life and what our focus is in life, and we find out that we need to sharpen up and to serve God more fully with our lives, today is the day of opportunity yet. And so I'd like to just close with a poem yet. The Race. Whenever I start to hang my head in front of failure's face, my downward fall is broken by the memory of a race. A children's race, young boys, young men. How I remember well, excitement sure, but also fear. It wasn't hard to tell. They all lined up so full of hope, each thought to win that race, or tie for first, or if not that, at least take second place. Their parents watched from off the side, each cheering for their son, and each boy hoped to show his folks that he would be the one. The whistle blew, and off they flew like chariots of fire. To win, to be the hero there, was each young boy's desire. One boy in particular, whose dad was in the crowd, was running in the lead and thought, "My dad will be so proud." But as he sped down the field and crossed a shallow dip, the little boy who thought he'd win lost his step and slipped. Trying hard to catch himself, his arms flew every place. Amidst the laughter of the crowd, he fell flat on his face. As he fell, his hope fell too. He couldn't win it now. Humiliated, he just wished to disappear somehow. But as he fell, his dad stood up and showed his anxious face, which to the boy so clearly said, "Get up and win that race." He quickly rose. No damage done, behind a bit, that's all, and ran with all his mind and might to make up for his fall. So anxious to restore himself, to catch up and to win, his mind went faster than his legs, he slipped and fell again. He wished that he had quit before with only one disgrace. "I'm hopeless as a runner now, I shouldn't try to race." But through the laughing crowd he searched, and found his father's face with a steady look that said again, "Get up and win that race." So he jumped up to try again, 10 yards behind the last. "If I'm to gain those yards," he thought, "I've got to run real fast." Exceeding everything he had, he gained 8, then 10. But trying hard to catch the lead, he slipped and fell again. Defeat, he lay there silently. A tear dropped from his eye. "There's no sense running anymore. 3 strikes, I'm out. Why try? I've lost, so what's the use?" he thought. "I'll live with my disgrace." But then he thought about his dad, who soon he'd have to face. "Get up." An echo sounded low. "You haven't lost at all, for all you have to do to win is rise each time you fall." "Get up," the echo urged him on. "Get up and take your place. You're not meant for failure here. Get up and win that race." So up he rose to run once more, refusing to forfeit. And he resolved that win or lose, at least he wouldn't quit. So far behind the others now, the most he'd ever been. Still he gave it all he had and ran it like he could win. 3 times he'd fallen stumbling, 3 times he rose again, too far behind to hope to win. He still ran to the end. They cheered another boy who crossed the line and won first place, held head high and proud and happy, no falling, no disgrace. But when the fallen youngster crossed the line in last place, the crowd gave him a greater cheer for finishing the race. And even though he came in last, with head bowed low, unproud, you would have thought he'd won the race to listen to the crowd. And to his dad he sadly said, "I didn't do so well." "To me you won," his father said. "You rose each time you fell." Now when things seem dark and bleak and difficult to face, the memory of that little boy helps me in my own race. For all of life is like that race, with ups and downs and all. And all you have to do to win is rise each time you fall. When depression, and despair shout loudly in my face, another voice within me says, get up and win that race. And so my challenge is, if we find ourselves in life where our goals are not what they should be and we are not reaching our goals, get up and win that race. Get up and try again. Don't lay in defeat. Let's kneel for prayer.